From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We got a great show for you today. Neil Sedaka, one of the greatest pop singer-songwriters ever, will join us to play Not My Job. But first, this week we found out that Barack Obama is the first president in history to have internet access at his desk. This explains everything. We don't have health care reform, cap and trade, peace in the Middle East, or anything else. But Obama just harvested 20 pumpkins in Farmville. That's what's been going on. So tear yourself away from your crops. Give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Now it's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there. My name is Blair Grayson. I'm calling from Covington, Kentucky.
Blair Grayson?
Yes.
That is a tremendously aristocratic name.
Well, thank you.
Are you haughty and proud?
Every day.
There you go. Blair, let me introduce you to our panel. First up, meet the humorist and author of the new audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 Years of Comments and Comic Pieces, available at a download near you, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Blair.
Hi.
Next, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Blair.
And lastly, say hello to the man behind the podcast known as Too Beautiful to Live, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hiya, Blair.
Hi, Luke.
Blair, welcome to the show. Glad to have you. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. You win our prize. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Here's your first quote.
I thought I'd get some applause on that one.
That was somebody who wanted even more standing ovations on Wednesday. Apparently, who was it?
That's our president, Barack Obama.
Yes, indeed. President Barack Obama. He delivered his first State of the Union speech this week. I know that's a little surprising, but it's true. It turns out the one he did last year was just a Be Your Best Self Now motivational seminar. But you know how these things go, these State of the Union. There's a lot of standing up and applauding. Perhaps anticipating that, Obama tried to make it as awkward as possible for the Republicans. You know, he said, if you support the troops, stand up and clap, and they all did. If you believe America is the greatest nation in the world, stand up and clap, and they all did. If you believe children are the future, you know, and they all stood up and clapped. If you think universal health care is the way to go, stay seated. And they were like, God, don't! What do I do? Boehner turned an even brighter shade of orange.
Yeah, when Gibbs said earlier in the week that the president was going to be feisty, I realized halfway through the speech what it was. He was messing with the Republicans.
He was.
So, as you say, mumble, mumble, mumble. Tax cuts. Up they come. You know, America first. Up they come.
You know,
tax cuts.
Obama must have watched Animal House. You know, they're going to get me no matter what I do, so I might as well have a good time. Did you see the camera that it caught Harry Reid yawning and almost falling asleep? Turns out he finds it hard to stay focused when the president is not speaking in his Negro dialect.
Well, I thought that was kind of a cheap shot. I mean, the guy's like 80 years old, right? It's 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
He'd be yawning at a Hooters mud wrestling night, you know?
By the way, and there was an amazing moment. People were wondering, you know, oh, the Republicans are going to shout, you lie, or talk back. They didn't. But Justice Alito responded, visibly at least, to the president's criticism of the recent campaign finance decision, Citizens United. The microphone didn't pick him up, but you could see him say, well, that's not true. Then you could also see, you couldn't hear it, but you could see Justice Scalia toss him a bit of herring as a reward.
Well, but the rule is, the rule is that the court, I mean, what was really interesting about that is that they just stared stonily straight ahead. They're not supposed to,
react
at all. So this was created a huge kerfuffle.
Yes, a provocation.
Kerfuffle, a word not used enough, I think.
You've used it twice. I think that's enough. That's enough for this week. Very good. Here is your next quote.
My twin 18-year-old boys have added to the pressure by giving me exactly 10 minutes to finish before they leave to go watch SportsCenter.
That was Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, who was feeling the pressure as he had a tough act to follow on Wednesday night. What was he doing?
He was giving the Republican response.
Exactly right. Yeah. The telegenic new governor of Virginia responded to the president and spoke, just like the president had done, in the legislative chamber to a cheering crowd, which he walked through shaking hands on the way to the podium. But everything was kind of smaller, you know? It was like a high school production of the State of the Union. They didn't have the set, they didn't have the budget, they didn't have the cast. But what was really weird, in addition to that, was this extraordinarily diverse group of people who were staged behind him. There was an African-American, there were Asians, there was a military, there was men and women, while more, shall we say, typical Republicans were in front of him in the chamber. So it was like behind him, models from a Benetton ad. In front of him, the cast of The Waltons. And they all liked him, you know.
You know what I thought?
What did you think?
I had forgotten about the 18-year-old twins, and I thought... Dating service, Republican dating service.
Oh, right. Yeah. With Scott Brown's daughter.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Very
exactly.
Smart.
We could create sort of a dynasty between Virginia and Massachusetts.
That's an idea.
Not seen since Jefferson and Adams.
Honestly,
probably
if,
end
if
up
they
about
bred,
the
you'd end up with a couple of generations, you'd end up with children so white they'd be translucent.
But very good looking.
But very good looking.
You could see their heart beating. That could be medically useful.
That's true. Here is your last quote.
Last time there was this much excitement about a tablet, it had some commandments written on it.
That, from the Wall Street Journal, was the quote that summed up all the hype this week about what?
The iPad.
The iPad. The iPad. And lo, Stephen Jobs came onto the stage in San Francisco, and he brought forth unto the nation a new Apple product. And lo, the feminine hygiene product jokes sprouted like weeds across the land. Steve Jobs himself said of the new iPad, quote, "It just feels right to hold the internet in your hands." Dude, have you seen what's on the internet? Does it come with rubber gloves?
Well, this is a little-known fact that I'm a leading economic indicator, and I'm pretty much a generic American. And my reaction to the iPad when it was revealed was, "That's it." And
That's
then
it.
My second reaction was, "Yeah, I need one." So there's like 3 million sales right there. Steve Jobs, if you're listening, you got it. You nailed it.
The Apple geeks, though, there's a lot of criticism. The geeks, though, say it has a lot of real uses. It's got the 10-inch wide screen. It's smaller than a laptop, of course, but it will be like a widescreen TV for children and Nicolas Sarkozy. And they say that it's great for doing actual work because it's just the right size to rest your laptop on. Protect your kitchen table.
I think aesthetically it has a problem, though, because it looks so much like the iPhone. It looks like an iPhone for an elderly person. It's just like my grandma. My grandma has
print.
A remote.
It's a large type. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, Reader's Digest large print.
Turn it on by clapping. Carl, how did Blair do in our quiz?
Blair had a perfect game, Peter. She had 3 correct answers. So, Blair, you win our prize.
Well done, Blair. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right now, panel time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, Harold Ford is a former congressman from Tennessee. He's now living in New York City, and he's thinking of running for the Senate from that state. He's doing his best to fit in with the locals, which explains why, during an interview this week, he described a smear campaign against him as what?
Can I get a hint?
Apparently not only have they been slinging mud, they've been slinging cream cheese.
Oh, he said it was a schmear campaign?
He said it was a schmear campaign. So he's racing around New York, and he's trying to do these... He's trying to connect with voters, show that he's one of them. And so he's doing a radio interview, and he says, as you know, there's been a schmear campaign about my position in some of the social issues. And fortunately, the interviewer was like, wait a minute, did you say smear or schmear? Ford's response, smear, schmear, forget about it. You're talking to me? Oy gevalt, mazel tov, Schenectady, you know. He's doing his best to fit in.
Didn't he have one of his things in a castle? Like, the week was unfolding, and it was like he was flying around in a helicopter, and they were asking him what baseball team he liked, and he said, well, I've had dinner with both owners, so it's hard for me to choose. And then they were like, you know, you're not really being of the people here. And so he followed up with a campaign event in literally a castle.
They were like, no, we meant a White Castle. No!
In Queens.
Yes. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. We call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lisa Shefty from Minneapolis.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Minneapolis?
It's a little chilly.
Yeah, a little bit. Do you kind of enjoy that?
A little bit.
Yeah. Weather like that, it's good just to know that you've survived it.
That's very true. And keep the riffraff out.
Absolutely.
Hey, I'm one of those riffraff.
And you're not here.
Lisa, welcome to our show. You're going to play the game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Lisa's topic?
It's hard out there for a geek.
This was supposed to be a great week for all of dorkdom. Steve Jobs announced the iPad. The season premiere of Lost is right around the corner. And we finally found soap strong enough to wash off all the blue body paint from our Avatar party. Bah! Then we read a story proving the fates have it in for we gentle nerds. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about a setback for geeks. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I am.
First up, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
As we all learn from the Sylvester Stallone masterpiece, Lock Up, prison can be a brutal, dangerous place. And now you can add less magical to the list. This after a court has ruled inmate Kevin Singer does not have the constitutional right to play his beloved Dungeons and Dragons while incarcerated. Singer sued officials at a Wisconsin prison after they took away his game board, D&D magazines, and his special set of dice. He claimed this violated his right to free speech, all 20 sides of it. Prison officials countered that Singer and his fellow D&D enthusiasts were, in their own way, a sort of prison gang, a pasty, beponytailed Simpsons-quoting gang, and broke them up. Singer lost in court probably because his formal defense consisted of telling prison authorities, quote, I am a level 12 paladin with spell resistance, while you are merely an apprentice dread necromancer with limited charisma points. I rest my case, good sirs.
You can't play Dungeons & Dragons in jail in Wisconsin. Your next story of losers losing comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Geeks sweat taking tests, they sweat talking to girls, and now they'll have to sweat in gym class. In a decision earlier this month, the Delaware Supreme Court ruled that all public high school kids, even the brilliant students at computer and tech magnet schools who were previously exempt from actual physical activity, cannot graduate without the minimum of 15 PE or extracurricular athletic credits, and no, chess club doesn't count. The court rejected what was dubbed the dork defense, that magnet students would suffer irreparable damage to their GPAs and self-esteem if forced to display their skinny white legs in gym shorts, and said the state has an obligation for the physical as well as intellectual health of students. Jason Wu, a junior at Wilmington's Jackson Tech, said the ruling means he'll have to go to summer school for sports. The only ball I'm interested in is a dodecahedron, he said.
Thank you. dorky kids forced to go to gym class, kicking and screaming, no doubt. And your last story, sure to kill the buzz at Comic-Con, comes from Tom Baudette.
Ladies, have you felt the strange urge to uninstall your mountain biker boyfriend and boot up the office IT guy? Well, you're not alone. Like the Twilight vampire series, geeks who also have magical powers and fear the light of day have recently noticed themselves becoming the objects of sexual desire. It is a trending topic on tech blogs, Twitter, and Linux code shareware forums. Frightened alpha geeks are looking for answers. Cornell behavioral science professor Susan Amundsen has one. Fertile women are attracted to able, competent men. Physical prowess is far less important in today's culture than, say, configuring a printer or pairing a Bluetooth device. It's a predictable trend. Predictable, perhaps. Acceptable, no freaking way, says GeekSpeak.com editor Jim Rowe. Once a girl notices a geek in that way, it is like sunlight on a vampire. Next thing you know, your World of Warcraft ranking's in the toilet and your Second Life avatar is living under a bridge. We're pwned, dudes. Totally pwned.
All right. Here are your choices from Luke Burbank. A court ruling says that prisoners can't play Dungeons & Dragons no matter how much it means to them. From Roxanne Roberts, geeks in Delaware losing a court battle and having to finally go to gym class. Or from Tom Baudette, geeks having to deal with finally and strangely being sexually desirable. Which of these is the real story that we found in the week's news?
I'm going to go with number one.
You're going to go with Luke's story?
Yes.
All right, your choice then is Luke's story about not being able to play D&D. Well, we spoke with an expert on this story.
This is not the first time that Dungeons & Dragons has been taken out of prison. What they're intimating is that these guys might be sitting around planning their escape when it looks like they're really, you know, killing a 12-level troll.
That was C. Robert Cargill. He's an expert in D&D and also a film and pop culture critic. He was, of course, talking about the real story, which is the prisoner who wasn't allowed to play D&D in prison. Congratulations, you got it right. You earned a point for Luke, and you have won Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
I was first in line to buy Halo 3. On Friday night, I played D&D. You say I'm a dork, but that's okay. I'm gonna be your boss one day.
And now the game where people who have done a lot of things have to do one more. It's called Not My Job. Neil Sedaka wrote or recorded some of the catchiest tunes in pop history. Calendar Girl, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, Happy Birthday Sweet 16, Stairway to Heaven. No, not that Stairway to Heaven. The other Stairway to Heaven.
And the original.
The original, the good one. And he's showing no sign of stopping. He's got an album of original songs out now called Music of My Life. We're so excited to have him here. Neil Sedaka, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So let's begin at the beginning. You have been doing this a long time. You were a child prodigy, right?
Well, I started as a concert pianist at the Juilliard here in New York. And then I got into crazy rock and roll. And I've been doing it for more than 50 years.
Oh, my gosh. Now, we heard that you published your first song when you were 13. Is that right?
Not quite. My first published song was 16.
16. Well, still a teenager. What were you writing about? It's like doing homework is hard to do?
I was writing teenage music for a teenage market.
Oh, really? So your love and angst and puppy love and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So what was it that made you change? You were at Juilliard, you're studying classical music, and then you said to yourself, oh, I want to get into this pop music thing because the groupies are better? What was your...
I wanted to make money.
Ah, that.
It's nice to play a Beethoven sonata, but it's nicer to make money.
Right. And did your parents approve of this move to vulgar popular music?
They hated it.
Really?
Oh, they were horrified. They said, there's a million people who could sing and write songs. You have to be a concert pianist. But I bought my mother a mink stole. She was over the moon, so happy.
Really? You're telling me you bought her off?
Yes.
So you eventually ended up at the legendary Brill Building, right?
We used to write from 10 in the morning till 5 at night 5 days a week, $50 a week, to write songs.
Now, this
what
is,
a crazy way to make a living.
Now, this is a famous time and place in American musical history because it was sort of like a pop song factory there on Broadway, was it, in Manhattan?
That's right, yes. And Carol King was there, Neil Diamond, Paul Simon, Tony Orlando. It was a nice group. And we wrote these songs, and my first songs were recorded by Connie Francis. For those of you in the audience who remember the great Connie Francis.
Yeah, yeah.
I wrote Stupid Cupid and Where the Boys Are.
You wrote that?
I did.
Wow.
And a lot of songs for her, and then Bobby Darin and Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley. But I'm name-dropping.
This whole idea of, like, songwriters sitting around in cubicles. Did you have cubicles in this office building?
There were several little rooms with just a piano. And if you got a hit, you graduated to a room with a window.
Oh, wow.
That was a big thing.
Now, what was interesting was all the names that you mentioned, Carole King, Paul Simon, yourself, of course, Neil Diamond, all of you went on to become very famous performers in your own right.
Well, I was the first in the Brill Building to sing. I was very fortunate. Between 1958 and 1963, I sold about 50 million records.
Wow.
My mother was shocked.
Yes. So you had all these amazing, amazing hits that we all remember still being played today through the 60s. In fact, there's that famous line. It's in the chorus of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. What is it, like down, doobie, do, down, down?
Those are some of my best lyrics.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. When I ran out, I put in a doobie-doo.
Really? And you were known for this. You were like the doobie-doo guy.
That's right.
Did you write them out, doobie-doo, down, down?
I did indeed.
Right. Now, you had all these songs during the 60s, and then in the 70s, things changed. I mean, things bifurcated. There was like disco on the one hand, and there was punk and hard rock and the other. I mean, was it difficult for you then as musical styles started to change?
Well, I used to walk down the street and people asked, didn't you used to be Neil Sedaka?
And what did you say?
I said, well, I'm still Neil Sedaka. Well, you haven't heard the last of me.
So you managed. Did you change your style? Did you just keep writing your own songs? And
I had to change my style. It was the early 70s. And I met a guy by the name of Elton John. Do you ever hear of him?
I've heard of him. He had funny glasses, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he put me on his record label in the early 70s, and I had a big comeback. Laughter in the Rain, and an album called Sedaka Is Back.
Now, you were on American Idol recently, right?
I was. I was on the second year with Clay Aiken and Reuben Studdard, and yeah. I was a celebrity judge.
Yeah.
Clay did a song of mine called Solitaire, which was a very, very big seller.
Wow, that must have been fun.
14-year-olds were asking for my autograph. It was fun.
I imagine. There was one thing I wanted to ask you about. You did a song for Captain and Tennille in the 70s, right?
Yes, I wrote a song called Love Will Keep Us Together.
And that became their huge signature hit. That was their song, right?
Thank you for remembering.
Absolutely.
I'm very happy I launched them.
Not a night of karaoke goes by in this country that song is not performed over 100,000 times.
It's true.
As long as they remember the words.
That's true.
Well, they're on a screen if you forget them.
Hey, before we move on to the game, I wanted to ask you about your new record. You just put out a record of your own songs, you performing them, just like in the old days. There's a song on it that you wrote when you were a teenager.
Yes, the only old song, I was 16 years old, it was a doo-wop song. I actually started a doo-wop group in high school in New York called the Tokens. Do you remember the Tokens?
Yes.
What was their hit?
The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
That's it.
That is
in
correct.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle. Very good.
That is correct.
Well, Neil, are you ready to play the game?
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, you've done so far so good, so we'll see what happens now. Neil Sedaka, we're so delighted to have you. We've invited you here to play a game that we're calling...
Oops, we can glue that back together, right?
You may have heard that last Friday, a visitor at the Metropolitan Museum of Art tripped and put her hand right through a masterpiece by Picasso. This, it turns out, is not the first time this sort of thing has happened, not by a long shot. We're going to ask you about three more instances that prove that God really, really does not seem to like the fine arts. Answer two questions out of three correctly. You will win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Neil Sedaka playing for?
Neil is playing for Tim Brown of Collinsville, Connecticut.
Ready to play, Neil?
Why not?
Here we go. Here's your first question. In 2000, a drawing by modern artist Lucian Freud worth more than $100,000 came to a bad end in London. What happened? A, somebody was smoking a cigarette and leaned too close to take a look at it. B, it was put through a shredder. Or C, it was mistaken for a child's drawing and thrown out.
I say A.
You say A. Somebody smoking a cigarette leaned too close and poof. That's your guess?
Yes.
I'm afraid it was B. It was put through a shredder.
Oh, boy.
Hadn't even been taken out of its packaging when an overzealous person at Sotheby's Auction House put it into the shredder. All right, you still have two more chances here.
Okay.
A masterpiece by Giorgio de Chirico was hanging in a wall in a townhouse in the Netherlands, perfectly safe, perfectly preserved, when what happened to it? A wrecking ball demolishing the building next door came through the wall and smashed it. B, it was hit by a meteor. Or C, the microwave oven on the other side of the wall melted it.
A.
You're going to go for A, the wrecking ball?
Yeah.
You're right. Very good. You said that with such confidence.
I knew it.
You knew it. You knew that story?
I was there.
You were there.
Neil Sedaka fan.
You ducked out of the way just in time.
Yep. Oh,
that's amazing. All right, well, this is great. You have one more question here. If you get this last one right, you'll win everything. Here we go. The most ironic end to a work of art was probably what happened to an installation by avant-garde artist Damien Hirst in 2001 in London. What was it? A, the anesthetized goat at the center of the piece woke up and walked away. B, a custodian thought the whole thing was just a pile of rubbish and threw it away. Or C, his piece using a whole cow was stolen by a gang of art thieves who took it home and made burgers.
B.
You're going to go for B, the custodian threw it away?
Yeah.
You're right again.
Woo!
Woo, he says.
You see, I could do something else besides write songs.
Again, you're not limited to that. The installation by Damien Hirst was a pile of artfully arranged ashtrays, half-filled cups, and empty beer bottles. So naturally, the custodian thought it was garbage, and he threw it away. He said, quote, I didn't think for a second that it was a work of art. It didn't much look like art to me.
Oh, my Lord.
Carl, how did Neil Sedaka do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. Neil had two correct answers, so he wins for Tim Brown.
Well done. Congratulations. I got to ask you a question. Probably, and I know this is a generalization, but if not the most famous, but one of the most famous songs you wrote was Breaking Up is Hard to Do. You've been married to the same woman for 50 years. Is that not true?
Close to 50 years.
Yes.
I was born married.
So how do you know how hard breaking up is?
Well, little did I know when I wrote it how difficult it was. But you know, if you're lucky to have that companion that does it for you, that's a great gift.
Right. So the original title was I Hear Tell That Breaking Up Is Hard to Do.
Well, and I also just rewrote it for my grandchildren. I called it Waking Up Is Hard to Do.
There you go. Neil Sedaka is one of the great singer-songwriters of all time. His new album is called The Music of My Life. Neil Sedaka, thank you so much.
Bye,
for joining
y'all.
Us. And wait, don't tell me. Bye-bye.
Bye, Peter. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Don't take your love away from me. Don't you leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue. 'Cause breaking up is hard to do.
In just a minute, Carl dons his black turtleneck and announces the long-awaited iRhyme. In our listener limerick challenge, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, we talk a lot about the nanny state, government intervening too much. Well, soon the state of Massachusetts will get in on it and require some of its citizens to do what under penalty of law?
Wear clothing if considering running for office.
No. Scott's Law, they'll call it.
I will require a hint.
Yeah, well, there'll also be tax incentives for flossing.
Brushing your teeth?
Yes, brushing their teeth. They're only calling it a nanny state because it's a state doing exactly what a nanny does. The new law will require daycare providers to brush kids' teeth after a meal under penalty of law. While many say the government is just going too far here, lawmakers say that's nonsense, and let me see your hands. You call that clean?
Boy, there is no possible way to create more of a negative association with brushing your teeth than to have some, like, you know, 70-year-old lady with a mustache coming in, forcing a toothbrush into your mouth.
Yes. Tom, it's a tough time for Democrats in Congress. Their majorities in both houses seem to be shrinking. Their popularity ratings are plummeting. And even worse, this week, Senate Democrats couldn't hold their caucus meeting in their regular meeting room. Why?
Because they were cleaning the carpets.
No.
No. with the health care reform bill.
Better do something with it.
Can I have a hint?
Well, they settled Page to pick up a really big new Glade plug-in.
It stunk.
Yes, it stunk. In fact, it smelled like a dead animal. Roll Call called
the health care reform bill.
Yeah, apparently.
Again, yeah.
Roll Call called it, quote, a fetid smell that some likened to a sewer, unquote. And the Democrats, who we thought could put up with any indignity, couldn't take it. They went down to the Capitol Visitor Center for their meeting, where eventually they just gave up and enjoyed the educational film Your Congress at Work. They were like, oh, we're supposed to pass bills.
That's what a quorum call is. I'll be darned.
When they first arrived in their meeting room and the smell hit them, well, obviously they first assumed someone had just forgot to change Joe Lieberman. But then the staff, the housekeeping staff at the Capitol investigated, and they found the real cause a few weeks ago after the special election in Massachusetts. The Democrats all agreed to hide their guts in a ventilation shaft, and it had started to smell.
My mom would have just said, light a match. I wanted to have the Glade, like I thought of this as being fancy when I was growing up, the spray kind of air freshener. My mom said, matches are good enough. But then we finally got some Glade, but we still had the matches. And so then I did a little pyrotechnics.
Did you really?
Did it work?
They did not get their damage deposit back on that rental.
Roxanne, this week at the Vatican, Pope Benedict issued a decree to Catholic priests. He told them to go forth and do what?
Does it involve kittens? Oh, he's a big cat fan.
Kittens? No, it's not about kittens.
He's very fond of cats.
I'm glad for him.
He snuck a cat into the Vatican against the rules. He used to feed cats in Rome, and he has a large collection of plates with cats on them.
Oh, the crazy cat pope.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Is his whole refrigerator covered in, like, Kathy comics that he's cut out of the funny paper? I'm a chocoholic.
He said this in Latin, but he said, presumably, to the priest, thou shalt recount every mundane detail of your life for public consumption.
They have to be on Facebook.
You know, you're actually right. What he said was you should blog, you should go on Twitter, you should go on Facebook, you should
use
the internet.
Did?
He told them to do that, yes. Let no one say that the Catholic Church, which still refers to Galileo as controversial, rejects progress. No, they're blogging. Pope Benedict said priests ought to, quote, proclaim the gospel, end quote, using blogs and websites. Priests and bloggers are not all that different to begin with, of course. They both dress funny and they don't have much sex. This leads to a whole new area of theological inquiry, namely WWJB, what would Jesus blog? Something like, I presume, money changers in the temple, NFW. Walked on water today, check out these pics from my phone.
The loaves and fishes goes viral, yeah.
Get a little app for that. There's an app for that. Multiply. Loaves and fishes. Problem with Jesus blogging is he's always getting crucified in the comments. Thank you very much. Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme if you'd like to play on air. Call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show on March 11th in New Orleans, Louisiana. Whether or not they win the Super Bowl, we'll be there. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Thomas from Urbana, Illinois.
Hey, Thomas, how are you?
Doing good.
What do you do in Urbana? Are you at the university there?
Yeah, I work at the University of Illinois. I run one of the residence halls.
Oh, really? So you're dealing with undergraduates all day?
Yes.
Wow, what's that like these days?
Exhausting.
Really? Are they still, are they still as crazy, or are they so worried about getting a job that they're actually studying?
A little bit of both. I wouldn't say it's actually making them study, but it's making them maybe a little bit more crazy.
I understand. Well, welcome to the show, Thomas. You're going to play the Listener Limerick Challenge, in which Carl Castle recites three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
Fantastic. Let's do it.
Here's your first limerick.
Why does it seem such a shock to Lyle that big reptiles just want to talk a while? Just give them a name, and they'll follow quite tame. It's the first step to training a...
crocodile?
Indeed. Ooh. Exciting week at the Blue Planet Aquarium in England. Trainers were able to get their crocodiles, named Paleo and Sukas, to recognize and respond to their own names, like puppies do. Said the aquarium's manager, quote, "They are very intelligent and started responding to their names in just a few days. Apparently, though, while Paleo, come here, boy, worked great, oh, God, Paleo, please stop chewing on my leg, God, it hurts, had no effect." Why would you want to call a crocodile? If only that crocodile over there would come here quickly at my desire. Wouldn't you want to teach the crocodile phrases that would force it to stay away?
Well, they used to have to lie motionless in the water for hours on end to seek their prey, and now they just hang around and wait till somebody calls them.
They're sitting there like going, Bob, he's asking for it, literally. All right, here's your next limerick.
With charming, obsequious chatter, my clients served up on a platter. Big deals I am closing when I am brown nosing. I get what I want when I...
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Let's hear it again. There's some internal clues.
With charming, obsequious chatter, my clients served up on a platter. Big deals I am closing when I am brown nosing. I get what I want when I...
Brown nosing?
Brown nosing. I have no idea.
How about flatter?
I get what I want when I flatter. That'd be a great one.
That was a good try, dude. You really... It was a hard one. You're still awesome.
While all of you wonderful, brilliant public radio listeners have no trouble discerning between cheap flattery and sincere compliments, a new study published in the Journal of Marketing Research claims most average people fall for it, even when they suspect it to be insincere. Basically, on the outside, you know you're being buttered up. On the inside, you agree. You're like, she's right. I do look good in this tube top. All right, very good. You have one more chance. If you get this one, you still win. Here is your last limerick.
In New Zealand Air's novel approach, most seatmates their airspace encroach. The footrests we spread to make a small bed will fully recline back in...
coach.
Right. While us Americans are forced to sleep upright on flights, cramped between screaming babies and errant elbows, Air New Zealand is offering its passengers beds on its long-distance international flights. Basically, the way it works is on your regular coach seats, you pull up the footrests on three adjacent seats. It makes a nice wide place to sleep. Now, of course, this means you'll need to either purchase three seats in order to sleep comfortably or be willing to get really, really, really friendly with the two strangers next to you. Carl, how did Thomas do in our quiz?
Well, Thomas wins our prize, Peter, because he had two correct answers.
Well done.
Fantastic.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing.
Yep,
bye bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Peter, we have a tie for first place. Tom, Roxanne, and Luke each has 3 points.
Oh my gosh. Well, through a random method too boring to explain, we have decided that Tom will go first. Tom, the clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. One week after he confirmed that he had fathered a child with another woman, blank confirmed he was separating from his wife.
John Edwards.
Right. A 7-year-old British boy's sponsored bike ride raised $240,000 for earthquake victims in blank.
Haiti.
Right. Former campaign manager David Plouffe was brought back in to help boost blank's effectiveness as we move toward the elections.
The Democrats. Democratic Congress.
Yes. Staffers at an employment agency in Britain refused to post an ad calling for, quote, reliable workers because it discriminated against blank.
Unreliable workers.
Exactly right. On Monday, Ali Hassan al-Majid, known by his nickname Blank, was executed for crimes against humanity in Iraq.
Chemical Ali.
Right. This week marked the 50th anniversary of the invention of the iconic and addictive shipping material, Blank.
Packing peanuts.
No, bubble wrap.
Oh.
People all over the country are making donations by texting the word Haiti to 90999. But one unexpectedly large donation came from Blank.
Haiti.
No, the display phones at an AT&T store. An anonymous employee posted on his Facebook page, quote, I wonder if AT&T is going to get pissed that I keep sending money to Haiti from all of our display phones. This is the first known incident of an AT&T store employee being helpful. The bill, of course, will go to AT&T. They didn't want to pay it, but after spending 2 hours on customer service with themselves, they just gave up and we'll let Haiti keep the money. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Well, Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points and Tom has the lead.
Well done, Tom.
That's not going to last.
All right, Luke, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Because of continuing problems with the gas pedals, blank halted sales of some popular models of their cars.
Toyota.
Right. In the closest vote ever for the position, the Senate confirmed blank for a second term as Federal Reserve Chairman.
Ben Bernanke.
Right. An American filmmaker in Haiti said he survived the earthquake with the help of his blank.
iPhone app.
Yes. Catcher in the Rye author blank died in New Hampshire at age 91.
J.D. Salinger.
Right. A Missouri man believed to have stolen a $20,000 diamond ring blanked during police questioning.
Died.
No, coughed the ring up. The movie Titanic was beaten out as the top-grossing movie of all time by blank this week.
Avatar.
Right, because he was busy preparing for the State of the Union address, President Obama was excused from blank in Illinois this week.
Jury duty.
Right, a Florida man suspected of grand theft auto was arrested by police who found him at home blanking.
Playing the game Grand Theft Auto?
Of course.
He takes his work home with him.
He does. The stolen SUV parked outside Mikkel Ecky's apartment was the first clue, but when police found their suspect playing Grand Theft Auto, they knew they had their man. Police also named Ecky as a person of interest in a number of other crimes, including toppling a gorilla down a ladder and forcing a frog to hop across a busy highway. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 7 correct answers for 14
wow.
more points. He now has 17 points, and Luke has taken the lead.
All right. How many, then, does Roxanne need to win?
She needs 7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
All right, here we go. Tall order for you, Roxanne, but you can do it. Fill in the blank. President Obama dismissed blank's claim of responsibility for the Christmas Day airplane bombing attempt.
Osama bin Laden.
Right. One of the men arrested this week for breaking into the office of Senator Mary Landrieu was also involved in the sting on blank.
Acorn.
Right. According to a report released this week, the United States is still unprepared to deal with the threat of blank.
Bioterrorism.
Right. French Parliament made a move this week to ban Muslim women from wearing blank.
Veils.
Right. Saying they're concerned about Punxsutawney Phil's welfare, PETA has suggested that Groundhog Day organizers replace him with a blank.
A fake groundhog.
Exactly right, a robot groundhog. Tonya Harding was among those who expressed condolences for figure skater blank upon the death of her father.
Nancy Kerrigan.
Right. MSNBC's Chris Matthews came under fire for saying that while watching the State of the Union, he, quote, forgot Obama was blank.
Black.
Right. Some students in Houston who spelled out class on their chests, one letter per kid, got into trouble after blank.
After the C and the L moved far away?
Yes, indeed. They did it for school pictures. School administrators were horrified when they saw the remaining 3 kids, now the butt of the joke, if you will, still sitting together. The students were suspended and fined for the prank, but as one senior said, CNL ran off, and it's not the fault of the three students, who were A, S, and S. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed 8 correct answers to win outright. She had 8 correct
answers. Oh, my
answers.
God.
So the 19 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Well done.
Nice work.
Congratulations, Roxanne. That was impressive. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that the iPad has finally been revealed, what will Apple's next big product launch be? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing information about the Home Buyer Tax Credit on houselogic.com/homebuyertaxcredit. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Christine Fiedler. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what is Apple's next big thing gonna be? Tom Beaudet.
Big indeed. Putting their tone-deaf marketing department to further use will be introduced to the 14-inch widescreen Max iPad.
Roxanne Roberts.
Mom's Apple Pie, a 3.14-inch device for female mathematicians.
Luke Burbank.
The iTaste. It's like a regular iPod, but it intuitively knows to display an error message when you try to download a Nickelback song.
Well, if Apple makes any of those panels, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Roxanne Roberts, Luke Burbank, and Tom Beaudet. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. Thanks so much. This is NPR.